You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Rwanda. The official story goes something like this. In the mid-1990s, during a civil war between ethnic Hutus and ethnic Tutsis, the Hutus committed genocide by planning to, and then killing, hundreds of thousands of Tutsis. The United Nations, despite the warnings of its top peacekeeper, Canadian General Roméo Dallaire, did nothing to stop it. In subsequent years, the main perpetrators of the genocide were brought to justice in international war crimes tribunals. Now we are told Rwanda has become something of a model state, a miracle of development on a largely failed continent. But recently, the official story took a significant hit. A leaked United Nations report on human rights violations in the Congo says that the current Rwandan president, Paul Kagame's army, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, or RPF, was also guilty of genocide. To Peter Erlinder, this is nothing new. As lead defense counsel for four top military officers accused of genocide in Rwanda, he has been questioning the official story for years. Several of his clients were found guilty of committing atrocities, but significantly, were acquitted of developing a long-term plan to commit those crimes. Peter Erlinder is professor at William Mitchell College of Law in Minnesota, and he joins us now on the phone. Hello, Peter.
Good morning.
Now, before we talked about the leaked report, can you tell me briefly about the significance of the decision of the War Crimes Tribunal for which you were the lead defense counsel?
Yeah, it's not only the finding of the court, it's the evidence that caused the court to reach its conclusion, because, as you mentioned, the accepted story is that the government and military, the side that lost the war, supposedly carried out a long-term conspiracy to kill Tutsis and Hutu civilians that was put into effect in 100 days of violence that came to be known as the Rwandan genocide. However, after 7 years of the best evidence that the ICTR prosecutor could muster, which actually is an adjunct of the U.S. Justice Department, the court was forced to conclude that, in fact, there was insufficient evidence to show that that long-term conspiracy or plan was supported by the evidence. There simply isn't the evidence that that's what happened. And the reason that occurred is because I was the first attorney that was able to get into the original UN files. So I've seen exactly the memos that were going back and forth between General Dallaire and New York. I've seen all of the correspondence back and forth from all of the parties. We put that evidence into the record, and it tells a completely different story than the one that was told by the victors who won the war. And of course, it's not an old story to have the victors tell the story in the war. The thing that is different about this situation is that the victors have had the help of the United States, Canada, and the UK in telling the story through the use of the Rwanda Tribunal.
Well, let's talk a little about some of the aspects of the story. The leaked report talks about the Congo. What's the significance of this report in relation to Rwanda? How is it that a report about human rights violations in the Congo are relevant to crimes that occurred in Rwanda?
Well, first of all, there isn't a very serious dividing line between Rwanda and the Congo. And as you know, it's sometimes difficult to tell whether you're in Canada or the United States. Vancouver and British Columbia and the state of Washington are virtually indistinguishable at various points. It's much more so in Congo and Rwanda. But the time periods involved overlap the events in 1994. So if you were to believe the story that has been told conventionally about Rwanda, it must mean these guys, this army, is committing genocide on one side of the border, but then completely changes character on the other side of the border and are acting in a completely different way at the same time. It would require a split personality that just isn't very credible. Actually, it's the UN documents, the original UN documents, that recorded what was going on at the time that we put into evidence that had been suppressed much more consistent with this leaked UN report than the story told by the victors about what they did in the war, the original UN documents that General Dallaire has not seen fit to make public, or anyone else in the UN, make absolutely clear that the story of what actually occurred is much different than the story that's been told later.
And what do these documents that you were talking about and this report as well, what do they tell us about the crimes that Paul Kagame's forces, Paul Kagame is the Rwandan president, what do they tell us about the crimes that his forces are accused of committing?
Well, first of all, it's quite clear that the RPF was a militarily dominant force in Rwanda for at least a year before the two presidents were assassinated, and we know that because of the report that General Dallaire generated himself in September of 1993. They became a huge army in a period of about 2 years. They went from being 3,000 troops to between 25 and 30,000 well-organized, well-trained troops, according to General Dallaire, in a period of 2 years. I mean, that can only happen if there's substantial assistance from outside. They demonstrated that superiority by nearly taking over the country a year before April 1994. We have the evidence that they, in fact, planned the final assault, developing large weapon dumps throughout the country. We have the evidence from inside the State Department that the RPF was in a position of having to either give up power through a power-sharing agreement or use its military superiority to seize power. We have the evidence from witnesses at RPF headquarters that on the night of the assassination, report was given that the president had been assassinated, and the order to complete the seizure of power was given by Mr. Kagame that night. And we also have the evidence that after the assassination, violence began almost immediately, not as a matter of surprise, but because 6 months earlier, the president of Burundi had been assassinated, the country next door. That country exploded into very similar violence. About 250,000 people died, and 500,000 Burundian refugees came into Rwanda. The U.S. ambassador testified that at the end of 1993, he personally warned Kagame that if he, and he warned Habyarimana too, if either of them started the Rwanda war again, they would be responsible for the same kind of mass killings that happened in Burundi. We now know that Kagame did start the war again. He did it by assassinating not only the Rwandan president, but the second Burundian president. The predicted killings did happen, and now we have the documents that show that the side that was defending the country sent memos to the other side saying, please, we don't have enough troops to put down the massacres touched off by the assassination. Let's put our troops together to put down the massacres. And according to General Dallaire's own notes, he says that, of course, Kagame wouldn't agree. He's winning the war. Kagame told Dallaire, according to Dallaire, that Kagame says the civilian deaths are just collateral damage for his war plan, in Dallaire's own words. So there's much more to know about this than meets the eye. And even General Dallaire's famous January 11th telegram, as I was cross-examining him on the stand, I asked him if he had any notes in his pocket. It turns out that he had the handwritten notes from his military intelligence officer from January 13th, in which his informant was asking General Dallaire when it was General Dallaire was going to search the headquarters of the president so that the informant could bring weapons there to be found by General Dallaire. I don't think General Dallaire has ever made that public before.
Well, let's talk about one of the assassinations. The instigating event in the Rwandan atrocities was the assassination of then Rwandan President Juvenal Habyarimana.
Right, and the President of Burundi, Atayimira, as well. Both of them were killed at the same time, as well as the Chief of Staff of the military and several of the military leadership. So it was a complete decapitation of the Rwandan leadership and the assassination of the second Burundian president within 6 months.
and there's evidence that Kagame was connected with these assassinations. Why was that evidence suppressed?
Well, reason, I think, is in additional documents that are in the record. And really, I want to make clear, this is not my opinion. All I can do is present the evidence. People can examine the evidence and see if they have contrary conclusions. But the U.S. State Department, USAID, ordered a human rights investigation conducted with UNHCR immediately after the RPF seized power. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International were unable to do human rights investigations in areas controlled by the RPF, which they reported in September 1994, because the RPF would not let anyone into the areas that they controlled, although Human Rights Watch and Amnesty had a lot of reports about crimes being committed in areas that they controlled. Also, UNHCR, we have some reports showing that the bodies floating down the river that so many people have seen on TV and in photographs actually was in an area controlled by the RPF. This was in a report of May 17, 1994 from UNHCR that's in evidence. The report that the USAID commissioned took place in July and August 1994. A man named Robert Gersony went in behind U.S. Or RPF lines and came out with a report saying that the RPF was killing 10,000 people a month in the area that he was in. They'd been doing it for a long time. That report made it to the desk of Warren Christopher, the Secretary of State. We have the memo to Warren Christopher from the George Moose, who was the head of the Africa desk at that time. So we know that the cover-up of RPF war crimes started no later than September of 1994, even before the ICTR was established. In my own opinion, is that the reason for that is because the State Department realized a bit late that it was an inconvenient truth that the Pentagon had been providing regular support for the RPF during their initial build-up from 2,000 troops to 30,000. When they began committing crimes, it became very difficult for the U.S. to prosecute them because the breadcrumbs would lead back to the Pentagon.
And is this the main reason why the West, the United States and other Western countries seem so interested in protecting Kagame?
Well, I don't know if that's the only reason, but the former chief U.N. prosecutor, Carla Del Ponte, published her memoirs initially in Italian, which kept it out of the Francophone and Anglophone world, but they were translated into English in February 2009, in which she explains that in May of 2003, she had the evidence to prosecute Kagame for the assassination of the two presidents and the RPF for at least 13 massacres with tens of thousands of civilian deaths. Because of this long-planned assault to seize power. But she was called to the State Department by Pierre Prosper, the Bush war crimes ambassador, and ordered to drop her investigations of Kagame and the RPF, and told if she didn't drop those investigations, she would be fired. According to her memoir, she responded by saying, I work for the United Nations, not for the United States. Prosper told her, that's what you think, and 60 days later, she had lost her job. It's also true that many of the prosecutors at the ICTR are provided by the Justice Department, as was Prosper himself when he prosecuted the Akiyesu case, one of the earlier cases. And it's also true that the ICTR is the only international tribunal in history that's been charged with prosecuting all crimes that occurred in the Rwanda war and has prosecuted only the crimes of the vanquished. Now, that can only mean that it's either the only war in history in which only one side has committed crimes, or the tribunal actually is something more like the Nuremberg or Tokyo tribunals in which the victors are deciding how the tribunal turns out. And now that Carla Del Ponte has published her memoirs, it's absolutely clear that that is the second. We also have sworn affidavits from a U.S. FBI agent, from a Queens counselor named Michael Horrigan in Australia, who said that in 1997 they presented the evidence of Kagame's assassination of Habyarimana to Louise Arbour and in January or February of 1997. And she told them to burn their files, pretend they never heard anything about it, and she disbanded the investigation team, and they resigned. So the depth of the cover-up is quite deep in both the U.S. and Canada, I'm afraid.
Here in Canada, General Romeo Dallaire, who you've mentioned, as well as Louise Arbour, are considered something of a... heroes for their role in the Rwandan situation. But you dispute that?
Well, I'm not sure how one should characterize their role, but it's quite clear. All I can say is that what I know about Louise Arbour's role is that she had the evidence as chief prosecutor to prosecute Kagame for the assassination of the two presidents in January and February of 1997. And she told the investigators, an FBI agent and a Queen's prosecutor from Australia, that they should pretend they didn't have that information, they should destroy their files, and she was disbanding their investigation team. I don't know whether that's heroic or not. Other people have to decide. That's what the evidence shows. With respect to General Dallaire, he has told this story about the January 11th telegram, and the superior's not responding, but that was never logical to me because, first of all, none of the telegrams back and forth, and I have them all, show that General Dallaire ever raised that question a second time about his troops being endangered. He never mentioned it to his troops on the ground, ever. And when I asked him whether he had warned his troops that they were under special danger, that he thought that he had found out about in January, he said no, and I have to suggest that if a commanding officer has information that causes him to think his troops are in special danger, it doesn't take New York to give the warning to his own troops. In fact, he has an obligation to do so, and it really is illogical to suggest that they didn't respond to his warnings. And in fact, he didn't give New York warnings, except in that one January 11th telegram. And now we know one of the reasons that he actually didn't believe his informant at the time the January 11th memo was written, because on January 13th, the same informant said he wanted to know when the search was going to take place so the informant could bring the weapons so General Dallaire could find them. I don't know if that's heroic or not, but that's what the evidence shows. So I think that what we have is a retelling of the story to fit the needs of a tribunal that has to prosecute only the vanquished, and we can we've had the evidence being restructured to fit the outcome that's needed.
Well, thanks very much, Peter, for joining us today and bringing all of this information to light.
Let me just say that the evidence I've talked about is in the record at the ICTR. It's also on a website that I've put up that has all the original documents, www.rwandadocumentsproject.net. And it's not a matter of opinion. Please have people check the documents themselves to see that it's the evidence, not me, that unfortunately has revealed this.
I'll give that website again.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Sure.
We've been speaking with lawyer and professor Peter Erlinder. He was a lead defense counsel for several of the top military commanders accused of genocide in the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. You can find some of the documentation he was speaking about during this interview, including the leaked draft report of human rights violations in the Congo, at www.rwandasdocumentsproject.net.